From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where we bring you deeper dives into top news stories. This week, we're coming to you from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois. There, two veteran political reporters, Doug Sovereign from KCBS Radio in San Francisco and Craig Dallimore from WBBM News Radio in Chicago, are covering the event. We're lucky enough to have both of them join us for daily updates this week as we head into the real start of what's already been a history-making election season. Here's their day one talk.
KCBS political reporter Doug Sovereign here with you from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And I'm joined by my longtime colleague, Craig Dallimore, reporter for WBBM. We have sat next to each other at many conventions over the decades, Democratic and Republican alike. We're both here in Chicago, your home turf, Craig, covering this one. And Craig, day one, I mean, not too much has happened yet, but we've both had a chance to talk with delegates and sort of get our feet on the ground and get moving. And what do you think we're going to see in this first day? Of course, the centerpiece tonight is President Biden giving what could be a rather poignant address.
No, I think so. And it's going to be both poignant and important because it's an address, frankly, that will give the president more time to explain his thinking in stepping aside, especially when he was saying for so long that he wouldn't. But it's also a time both for the party to praise him. And in fact, one of the speakers at this morning's delegation breakfast for Illinois said, we're giving him his flowers today. That's going to be part of it, but it's also going to be the time for him to say, to pass the torch. And I think that is something that's, you know, very important for Democrats across the country to hear, for those who might be wavering about whether this is something that he's doing reluctantly or whether it's full-spirited. In fact, I should point out speaking this morning, and this is some remarks that I will undoubtedly use later, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth said, you know, I talked to the president last week and was saying how sad I was, and I was kind of mourning a little bit. And he told me, no, this is the right thing to do. And I'm really up for this. And she said he was like energized and was telling her, no, don't be down about this. We got to get this done. And she said he was high spirited and seemed encouraged that things were going the way they're going.
And let's hope that's the message, the spirit he brings to this speech tonight. I know talking to delegates at the California breakfast, and for people who don't know, the delegations often have their own events each morning before they come back together for caucus meetings and party business during the day, and they have various guest speakers come. One delegate in the California group likened it to the Olympics and said, look, when you watch those 4x400 relays, they pass the baton. If they drop it, it's a disaster. We didn't drop the baton. This was smooth. It went the way it's supposed to go. Now the team can go on to victory. And I mean, she did this whole Olympic metaphor. And they feel, and remember, these are delegates who were Biden delegates. I mean, most of these people who are here were big Joe Biden supporters and were chosen as Biden delegates. They've become Harris delegates, and they're mostly on board with that. I think overwhelmingly they are. But I think it's important for them to see that, as you say, to have Joe Biden come out and really wholeheartedly endorse Harris, explain. I'm sure he'll say something like, the best decision I ever made was picking her as my running mate. She's ready. She's up to the task. And not just for these delegates, but for the country watching, for those who have doubts about this process and who still think, gee, I voted for Biden in the primary. How come Harris is the nominee now? I think that's important for the party and for all those voters and the Democrats and the voters who haven't made up their minds yet to see. And also, he's going to get a very warm, rousing reception. He's going to get a standing ovation, and it's going to be heartfelt from all these delegates. I'm sure there will be some tears on the cheeks in this hall as he gives what kind of is, well, I started to couch it as a farewell address, but many delegates told me it's not a farewell address. He's still the president. He's got 5 months to go. This is him passing the baton, passing the torch. Then we move on to Kamala, and he's actually going to leave town after tonight and let her have the stage all to himself.
And that sounds like a good move for him to make. I think the other theme that we were hearing, and you know, I think for the Illinois delegation, this first breakfast was important because you can kind of get complacent when you're the host delegation. Yeah. But the message was not just, wow, this is exciting. It was also, hey, we have an awful lot of work to do, and this is not over. We haven't, yeah, the baton's been passed, but this is the lap where we have to win it. And, you know, the Governor Pritzker, who had a lot to do with the convention even coming to Illinois, was saying, you know, we have to do the work. And every other speaker mentioned that, including of all people to have on the first day, Gwen Walls, the vice presidential nominee's wife, who would be the second lady if this team wins, who also kept up the theme that we've only got 78 days to do this, and that's how we roll, basically, was her message, that you know, we've got to do this all together. So I think there was urgency along with the excitement.
Yeah, and that was true with California too, where the featured speaker was former speaker, now Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi. She gave a pep talk to these delegates. Not that they need a pep talk, but it was like a grassroots manual of all the things they need to do to get out and win. The ground game, the door-to-door, the canvassing. I want all you Californians to go out to Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico and places where we need to carry these states. I mean, there is no question that with 11 weeks to go, they're going to be very focused, because they know, she knows better than anybody, it's all about get out the vote. It's all about turnout. And in a race this close, and you look at the polls, and yes, the latest CBS News poll, the Washington Post poll, show Kamala Harris leading now 3, 4, 5 points, whether you're looking at likely voters or registered voters, even in some of the battlegrounds, ahead in some of the battlegrounds. But we all know that's roughly within the margin of error. 11 weeks is a lifetime. Look what happened in the last 7 weeks of this campaign.
Exactly.
Nothing we could have predicted. So they know this is very much a jump ball, and they've got to get out there and work, work, work. And it's interesting because Pelosi, talking to her afterwards, and she did a gaggle with the media, she's worked very closely with Joe Biden for many years, and there's a frost between them now. She has not spoken with him since he made that decision. That's a month, where almost a month, 3 weeks, say, where she hasn't had a conversation with him. You'd think in a normal situation, you pick up the phone. No, they're not talking at the moment. We asked, are you going to see him while he's here? Well, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, she demurs on all these questions about when they'll speak, when they'll see each other. And she does not take credit for orchestrating this shift from Biden to Harris. She clearly thinks it was the right thing to do, because it was about winning not just the presidency, but the House and the Senate. And that, I think, for Biden is what convinced him, is that he saw that the down ballot races were going to be hurt a lot with him at the top of the ticket, and with the new energizing of the base, that's going to help them down ballot. And we're seeing that in polling. But she's not taking credit for it. Now, someday we may find out behind the scenes when the story is written, she did pull all these strings. She's insisting she didn't pressure a lot of the people who spoke publicly to convince him to step down. But she also has no regrets about doing it. And when someone asked, you know, would you do anything differently, given how it's worked out? She said, would I do anything differently? You know me, I make very deliberate decisions. And she wouldn't even answer the question. She thought this through very carefully, worked on it for a while, probably in league with Barack Obama. And look where we are now. What a different race it was from a month ago. And now the pressure is on Kamala Harris this week to deliver, Craig, and to show the country who she is and bring along the third of the country who haven't really defined her yet.
And I think defining herself is the thing that people who are still hesitant to feel comfortable about this are almost demanding. You know, there have been some people I've seen interviewed and some people I've interviewed myself who are saying, we don't really know her yet. And they're waiting for solid answers. She gave some on the economy this past week, which interestingly enough has got the Republicans, you know, picking apart everything she said, even though their own candidate has, you know, the most detailed thing he has said about is I'm going to solve inflation in the first week or in the first 100 days, inflation will be gone. And they're saying, see, he's already, wait. You know, how is he going to do that? But he's not saying.
If you look at the polling, which I was looking at in detail this weekend, a larger number of people think Trump will be better on inflation. But when they're asked why, the answer is not because of specific policies, which they don't even know what they are. It's just a general confidence that he'll fix it, that he's better at fixing things like that. It has nothing to do with actual economic policy. So we in the media want to hear specifics. And yes, people want her to flesh out the skeleton she laid out Friday about her plan on inflation and the economy. But a lot of voters, they're not looking at the nitty gritty of the details of that. They just know they have a sense of who they think will be better at the moment. That's Trump on that issue. It's Harris on other issues. But yeah, she has to, I don't expect her to put a lot of meat on the bones at the convention, because that's not the place where you roll out detail. It's not like a State of the Union where you list an agenda so much as speak optimistically about the future and we're all going to come together. We're going to rebuild the middle class, sort of bigger themes more than I think great policy details coming this week.
Yeah, I think these are vision statements that people right. are, and frankly, I think that's what people are looking for the convention. Frankly, it's all that they got from the convention in Milwaukee, and that is, you know, maybe enough. It gives people at least something to latch on to know whether they want to keep listening. And so, yeah, I think that's going to be important. And frankly, I think the other thing is, you know, we just sort of glossed over it, but the down ballots, you know, I'm willing to bet that Nancy Pelosi was getting a lot of pressure from her troops, because
she absolutely was. Yes.
In this area, Michael Quigley, one of the Chicago Congress members, was one of the first people to start basically an outcry immediately that we need to do something. We're dying down here. Was his message, and I know that I think a lot of those people are breathing a sigh of relief.
She alluded to that, saying, "Look, I've had members from all over the country," and she mentioned Illinois, call me about their races, saying, "Oh, I've had a surge in volunteers and donations and energy that they weren't seeing until Harris took the top of the ticket and became the nominee." And I do think she was feeling that heat from behind the scenes, even though she's only Speaker Emerita now. Everybody knows what her skills are. And a lot of people are saying, look, you know, it's not there. And they've seen a dramatic shift. And I mean, we saw that as long as a year ago, Barack Obama talking about it, some Democratic Party operatives worried about the Biden operation and what it was going to mean in 2024. And it all came to a head after that debate. And here we are.
I wonder, though, I mean, with the kind of speakers that we're going to be seeing this year, and Barack Obama, of course, being one of them, Hillary Clinton another, how do they maintain the excitement, the momentum that seems to be there? You know, can even as gifted speakers as we're going to see, keep the energy level high and, frankly, keep the attention of the other, you know, the people who weren't hard on one side or hard on the other?
I think they're going to, each of those speakers will pay tribute to Joe Biden. Absolutely, Barack Obama will. I think Hillary Clinton will as well. They'll pay tribute to Joe Biden and they will lavish praise on Kamala Harris, talk about her attributes. Yes, she's ready. Yes, she's qualified. This is the time. Let's make history. Try to fire up the troops by the end of those speeches and just have it sort of build towards walls on Wednesday night. It'll probably be kind of folksy. And finally, Kamala Harris herself on Thursday. And we'll see. I mean, that'll be a challenge for them to keep this energy going. But I think they will come out energized and optimistic, as the Republicans were a month ago before we knew what was going to happen. But knowing, as you say, that they've got a job ahead of them and a lot of work to do to get it done.
Indeed.
And Greg, I think we should probably wrap it up, but we're going to be doing this every day here on the On Deadline podcast. It's always a treat to talk politics with my colleague, Craig Delamore from WBBM. Craig, thanks for doing this.
It's my pleasure. And I'll see you at the United Center.
We'll be sitting like 8 inches apart and we'll be covering here.
Maybe four this time, but yeah.
Covering the convention all week. Craig Delamore, I'm Doug Sovereign from KCBS. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks again to Craig Delamore of WBBM News Radio in Chicago and Doug Sovereign of KCBS Radio in San Francisco for this on-the-scene convention coverage. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to thank you for listening to this special edition of the On Deadline podcast coming to you from the 2024 Democratic National Convention. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.